than normal. But I want to continue the series that I've been working my way through now. It's actually up to part four now on humility and hunger. Two classic questions I get asked every day in my house by my three children. Number one, how long till dinner? Number two, how long till tea? Okay, any parent here, I'm hoping that I'm not alone in the fact that my children seem to have come to me, been born to me with this built-in food countdown clock. It seems to have been factory fitted, it comes as standard, and each one of them possess this built-in food countdown clock. And this food countdown clock basically dominates. Everything works around that clock and to that clock. And so it runs throughout the course of the day with the sole purpose of letting us know how long it is until the next time we get to eat. And so everything is working to the food countdown clock. So how long till dinner? How long till tea? How long till I can have a snack? These are the kind of classic questions that I get. If the food countdown clock is too far away from the next meal, then it seems to have the power to encourage them to ask for Jaffa cakes in my house, okay? Because Jaffa cakes in my house seem to possess the power to help you survive until you reach that next kind of meal time. And so all the time my kids are asking me questions like that. Can I have a Jaffa cake? How long till dinner? How long till tea? How long till snack? Now, when my kids don't ask for food, I kind of know something's up. When their appetite is missing or is lacking, and I begin to worry a little, because to me it's kind of like a signal that something's not right when the appetite's not there, when they're not hungry, because hunger is a sign of health. And when we're unwell or things aren't right or we don't feel 100%, appetite is something that goes. Hunger is something that goes. And whenever we call mealtime in a house, there's whoops of joy, of enthusiasm. You know, when it's mealtime, as long as there's not peppers involved, it's okay. It's exciting. You know, that's just me. The kids love it as well. But there's whoops of joy and enthusiasm. So we don't really generally have a problem with getting them up to mealtime. But when there's like an apathy, when there's like an indifference, when there's a kind of, no, I'll take it or leave it, it's usually ever a signal that they've been snacking on too much of the other stuff. And sometimes we can be full because, as I alluded to last time, sometimes we can be full of the wrong kind of things, and that can affect our appetite for God. But also it can sometimes mean that it's an indicator that all is not well. Because hunger is a sign of health. I believe it's the same spiritually, that a hunger for God and the things of God is a sign of health. And when we feel like our appetite is lacking, or maybe we've lost something of our appetite, it's often an indicator that something's not right. Something is up. Romans 12 verse 11 says this, and now wouldn't it be great if we always felt like this? Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Other versions say this. Now wouldn't this be great if this described your Christian life? It always was like this. It says this: be excited, be enthusiastic, be fueled in a flame, aglow and burning as you serve God. I mean, wouldn't it be great if we were like that 365 days a year? But you know, I really believe, in being honest, I'm not always like that. You know, I don't always necessarily feel excited, enthusiastic, fueled in a flame, aglow and burning. I recently heard someone say that as Christians, we're like matches. We can feel like matches. You know, you spark a match, and in that initial point of sparking a match, there's like a burst of life and fizz and pop and energy and excitement. And sometimes we feel like that in our Christian life. It feels alive, fizzing, popping, energy, passion. It's like, poof, we're just on fire for God. You know, but there's also that time when that settles down and the match is just steadily burning. And sometimes in our Christian life, we feel like that. You know, it doesn't necessarily feel like fizz, pop, bang, but we're just steadily burning. And yet there's other times when the match burns out. And sometimes, if we're being really honest, spiritually we can feel like that. Can feel like something's fizzled out, like we've burnt out. And the truth is that as much as we'd love to say, you know, I'd always love to feel enthusiastic and excited, aflame, aglow and burning, The truth is that sometimes we go through these times, through these seasons in our spiritual life, whereby spiritually we begin to lose or lack or lose something of our appetite for the things of God. And when that happens, when we feel like it's missing, it's an indicator, just like in the natural, that something's not right. Something's up. There's something there, that an issue that needs addressing. We need to get back to a place of health so that we feel an appetite again. And I just want to ask a question this morning. We'll perhaps search through this today. I mean, what do we do when our spiritual get up and go has got up and gone? What do we do in them times? What do we do in them moments? It'd be easy for me to just stand here and say, you should be on fire, you should be aflame, you should be glowing, you should be burning. But it's not always like that. And sometimes we do go through these seasons where we feel like, I just don't feel like I've got as much appetite to pray as I used to, or open the word as I used to. I don't feel as enthusiastic about coming to church as I used to. I don't feel as excited about spiritual things as I used to. It's not that we don't believe. It's not that we don't love God. It's not that we're not going to church. We still believe. We still love God. We're still coming to church. But someone talks about the things of God, and instead of like feeling this sense of appetite, which we might have felt before, actually what we feel is more of an apathy. It's like apathy has replaced appetite. And there's this kind of sense of like, you know, something's not right. When you don't feel 100% healthy, Beth came home from school just this last week unwell, and I offered her tea. There was like, no, I don't want it. I don't feel like it. That's what you feel like. And so when someone stands up and offers a spiritual food, if the appetite's not there, sometimes it's just like, I don't actually really feel like it. Just want to give you a definition of apathy. And I want us to journey through this together. And I want us to understand why we're journeying this through together. I don't want to, as we read this definition, it's not about trying to make anyone feel miserable. It's about just sometimes trying to put our finger on things that are perhaps issues of why we're missing a greater level of hunger for God. A definition of apathy is this. It's the absence, the suppression, or lack of passion, motivation, emotion, enthusiasm, or excitement. A lack of interest in or concern for things that others find moving or exciting. A feeling of indifference or lethargy, unresponsiveness or coolness. Okay, that is the definition of apathy. Has anyone ever been there before where you've been in a place where others have felt really excited and passionate about what's happening and you're just like, eh? You know, they're like, that was a stonking meeting. You're like, it was all right. You know, whoa, wasn't that powerful? Was it? You know, we've been in them places, or is that just me? You know, have you ever walked out of that meeting and someone's going, whoa, that was so powerful? And you're thinking, oh man alive, where was I today? And sometimes we go through these seasons when our passion seems to be missing, our motivation seems to be missing. There's no real emotion, enthusiasm, excitement. We find feeling a bit indifferent about things. We feel a bit spiritually lethargic. There's a bit of an unresponsiveness about, or a bit of a spiritual coolness. I believe that we can suffer with spiritual apathy. I believe it's a really real condition, spiritual apathy. I believe that it's something that God puts his finger on in the Bible. That apathy, that lack of appetite and hunger. I want to give you a couple of examples this morning, the second of which we'll focus on. But you know well Revelation chapter 3. You know when Jesus is sending the messages there to the churches. And Revelation chapter 3 verse 14 through to 22, the church of Laodicea. You know, Jesus comes and says to them, he says, what? I neither find you hot nor cold, but I find you lukewarm. I find this coolness about you as I look at you. And so we can say that what he found was something of apathy within the church. He looked down and said, there's an apathy that's crept in there. They're neither hot, they're neither passionate and hungry, nor are they cold. It's not like they're not turning up and not doing the things that they're doing before. In fact, he mentions their works there. So they were still doing stuff. It's just that the hunger factor, the appetite factor, the passion factor, the excitement factor had kind of gone out of the church. And he speaks to them about that very thing. And I think if many of us this morning, if we just level up and if we're just going to be really honest, which I'm a massive fan of, many of us have at some point suffered with spiritual apathy. We either have, we are, even maybe right now, or you might think I'm a prophet of doom, but at some point we probably will. We will go through these seasons when we feel this way. It's not a bad thing to kind of just look at our relationship with God by that definition and just say, well, where are things at right now? You know, when we're thinking about our prayer life, when we're thinking about worship and the things of God and church, where do I feel passion, motivation, etc.? You can read that in your own time. I've been there. I've known what it is to have those times when my hunger and my desire and my motivation and my passion levels have dropped and I've lost my appetite. You know, just recently I went for a season, I couldn't even put my finger on it, what happened, but it was just like, it was almost like, I described it to someone as like someone just threw a blanket over me, and all of a sudden, from things being okay, it was just like the alarm clock was going off in the morning, where previously I'd be able to get up and get down and get it was just like, oh, you know, and it was there, and I felt it, and it's not a nice place to be. And it can differ in lengths for us, and times, thankfully, it's not lasted very long, but for some of us, it can be like that for fleeting periods and days, or the odd day here or there. For others of us, we can feel like that for weeks. For some of us, we've been like that for years. It's just the general passion and enthusiasm and motivation and drive and desire that's missing. And if I'm missing it, I have to say, just like it in a natural sense, well, something's not right. Something's up. And you know, some people read those letters to the church in Revelation as like Jesus was just sending messages of wrath to the church. Just like, boom, you know, just going to slam you for your apathy and just going to take you to town over your lack of appetite. Friends, they've totally misread it. Do you know what it was? They were love letters that were meant to awaken them. If you actually read that right there, Jesus says, I'm speaking to you about this stuff because I love you. He says, I'm knocking on the door because I'm hoping that you'll open up your heart and let me in. I'm speaking to you this stuff, Laodicea, because I want to reignite passion. I want to see hunger and fire. And I want closeness and intimacy with you. And it wasn't just that he was coming along saying, you're rubbish. You know, as our young people say, you suck. You know, you're awful. It wasn't just, I'm going to slam you and leave you like that. He begins to speak to him. He says, I counsel you and I advise you to change this and tweak that and do that because I want to see hunger and appetite and passion. And the whole emphasis of it is this: I'm speaking to you because I love you. Because I love you. And you know, sometimes I know that we get those moments when Jesus comes and he puts his finger on an issue in our life, and as someone once said, it's easier to say ouch than it is amen. But you know, the reason that even in bringing this message today, and I pray that as I bring it, even as I bring it, God, don't let me help me not to sound like some condemning voice from a pulpit who's just slamming your people. Let the tone come through that you're speaking to us because you love us, that you're knocking on the heart of our door because you want closeness, because you want to come in, because actually what you want to do is awaken a whole new level of passion and hunger for Jesus Christ. He was concerned because he loved them. But the second version, the second account or example I want to give you, which is where I want to kind of just camp out for a bit today, is Haggai chapter 1. And it says this: in the second year of King Darius, on the first day of the sixth month, the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai to Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and Joshua, son of Jozadak, the high priest. This is what the Lord Almighty says: these people say the time has not yet come to rebuild the Lord's house. Then the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai: is it a time for you yourselves to be living in your paneled houses while this house remains a ruin? Now this is what the Lord Almighty says: give careful thought to your ways. You have planted much, but harvested little. You eat, but you never have enough. You drink, but never have your fill. You put on clothes, but are not warm. You earn wages only to put them in a purse with holes in it. This is what the Lord Almighty says. Give careful thought to your ways. Go up into the mountains, bring down timber, and build my house, so that I may take pleasure in it and be honored, says the Lord. You expected much, but see, it turned out to be little. What you brought home, I blew away. Why, declares the Lord Almighty? Because of my house, which remains a ruin, while each of you is busy with your own house. Therefore, because of you, the heavens have withheld their dew and the earth its crops. I've called for a drought on the fields and the mountains, on the grain, the new wine, the olive oil, and everything else the ground produces, on people and livestock, and on all your labor of your hands. Then Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest, and the whole remnant of the people obeyed the voice of the Lord their God and the message of the prophet Haggai, because the Lord their God had sent him, and the people feared the Lord. Then Haggai, the Lord's messenger, gave this message of the Lord to the people: I am with you, declares the Lord. So the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, you're getting the picture, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the high priest, and the spirit of the whole remnant of the people. They came and began to work on the house of the Lord Almighty their God on the 24th day of the sixth month. The people had just been released from exile in Babylon. King Cyrus had released them to go back to their homeland. They were going back to their homeland with the express purpose, with the mandate and the mission to rebuild the temple. They were going back to rebuild a temple. The temple signifying, as you know, the place of prayer, a place of worship, a place of sacrifice and service, a place which was symbolic of a relationship with God. They were going back to build this place. It was the mandate. And they launch into this with great passion and hunger and enthusiasm and excitement. It's all there. And they begin to set about doing that kind of rebuilding project that they've come to take a part in. And how many people know that it's when we start something, we often have passion and enthusiasm and hunger and excitement. And it's not usually in the starting, and quite often it's not even always in the finishing, it's in the middle stretch where it's most challenging. So this wasn't in my notes, but it became a great illustration to me yesterday because me and John Boulderstone and some of our friends ran a 10K at Holcombe yesterday, and we were running that, and it was quite hilly by Norfolk standards compared to what I'm used to. And I launched off that start line with great enthusiasm and excitement. I was buzzing, as was John, and we both left at quite a good pace, shall we say, by our standards anyway. And, but then we turned a couple of corners and saw kind of long increasing hills. And it was at 3, 4, 5K, my passion and enthusiasm and excitement for the mission waned. And the pace slowed, and I went from feeling enthusiastic to thinking of all the plausible ways I could quit this run. What do I see people do? Well, their legs go wobbly, and can I justify, how can I go back to my family and explain? And, you know, and you're running through that, but you kind of, we got through that, and then you see the finish line, and of course, you know, well, my family actually said this to me. They said, cool, Dad, you looked dead when you came over the line. Right, I tried to put a brave face on it. You know, I saved my best sprint until I saw people who knew me. I just got to keep that one in the locker until I see anyone who knows me, and then just power through. Like it was a breeze, but my face was telling a very different story. It's that middle stretch. You know, our spiritual life, sometimes someone comes, brings a message, we launch out. It's like that match again. Fizz and fire and pop and passion. And then we hit the middle stretch. And these guys had like hit the middle stretch. And they'd cleared the rubble. They'd rebuilt an altar for burnt offerings. They'd begun daily offerings to God. They'd laid foundations. But it all grinds to a halt in the middle step, in the middle stages. This hunger and passion seems to drift into this apathy and this sort of loss of spiritual appetite. It's Bill Johnson who says that staying hungry is the real challenge. That's the real challenge, staying hungry, maintaining hunger and passion. And God sends Haggai to them with his message. They recognize he's God's prophet. And he comes to them with a message. And I think he just puts his finger on a few things that I believe... If I can just quickly look at them, where we can learn some lessons as to why and how we can sometimes lose our spiritual appetite. The first thing I want to say to you this morning is this. Appetites fade and apathy sets in when we don't fully establish a place to meet with God and make the time to meet with God. So appetites fade and apathy sets in when we don't fully establish a place to meet with God and take the time to meet with God. So they went back with the top priority of rebuilding the temple, okay, but they never saw it through. It was the hub of spiritual life, but it laid in this kind of unfinished state for 14 years. They got something of an altar there, but it never finished. They've got foundations, but they never got beyond the foundational level. And yet they were meant to establish, fully establish a place of prayer and worship and sacrifice and serving in their lives. It was meant to be the hub, the center of that community, that actually their lives were to operate out of a place which first said, my first priority is to establish in my life time and a place to meet with God. And then I build my life out from that place. I build around it. And as they set that up, when they initially started, what we see is as they begin to establish something of prayer and worship, and they begin to establish something of taking time to meet with God, energy levels, passion levels, enthusiasm levels are running high. But as the focus shifts and they don't fully see that through, and it never reaches beyond a foundational level, then what happens is apathy begins to set in. They'd built something of prayer. They'd built something of worship. They still went there to that place and to that altar, but not at the level that they were supposed to fully build it. Do you know that we need to establish a place of prayer? We need to establish worship in our life. We need to establish a place where we bring our sacrifice and where we offer ourselves to God. And yes, it's a challenge, but actually that if we don't get that fully established in our life, what we find is it's much easier for apathy to set in and spiritual appetite to wane. And so they'd got something, and maybe we get something, but we go through seasons where we feel hot and cold if we don't really get it established. And all of a sudden, meeting with God, which should have been their number one priority, has now become their number two priority. Their focus has shifted because they've not established it. Something about establishing and building in our lives time and a place to be with God in our homes, in our daily schedule, that helps us keep our focus on God. And yet, something about when we don't really get that fully established, our attention is much easier drawn away and our focus is much easier drawn away to other things. So their focus is shifted off of that now onto thinking about, well, I want to build my life, I want to build my house, I want to do them kind of things. And in verse 2, he says, it's not time to build the Lord's house. I haven't really got time for that because I'm so focused and taken up. And if we don't really take that time, our hunger can fade. Do you know one of the classic signs of spiritual apathy, if you've ever been through it, like I said, like I have, and maybe you have, and maybe you are, is that we feel a lack or a desire of just motivation. I guess you could really call it like spiritual oomph. We miss that kind of just that motivation. The motivation to pray, the motivation to worship, the motivation to take the time to offer ourselves to God or get up a bit earlier or stay up a bit later. Our motivation levels are great indicators of our hunger or passion levels. I was actually honestly reading a story this week, and as I was preparing this, about a college in the United States that tried to address the issue and actually launched an apathy club. They launched and advertised an apathy club, and guess what happened? No one turned up. True. You see, when we feel hunger and passion, we feel motivation. Hungry people do things. And so if I'm missing it, well, then I have to say, actually, there is something up. Maybe there is some apathy, and maybe I have lost my appetite. Number two, appetites fade and apathy sets in when we kind of become content with the way things are. So they'd go to worship God in the middle of this kind of ruined temple with all this rubble around them. They'd go there and meet with God, and that just intrigued me, because they knew that that wasn't what it was supposed to look like. And I was just thinking about this. It really did intrigue me, because I think there's really interesting about when you've been through apathetic seasons, you think, actually, yeah, I can identify with that. Because they knew that life shouldn't look like this, And yet it doesn't seem to be concerning them as much as they knew it should do. And sometimes what happens is when we've lost our appetite and we find ourselves in a spiritual apathy, is we look at our lives and we say, actually, my prayer life, my Bible study, my worship, my family, my marriage, my relationships, it's not supposed to look like this. It's supposed to be something more than this, yet it doesn't seem to be concerning me as much as I know it really should do. And we know it didn't concern them as much as it really should do because they weren't doing anything about it. And sometimes when we're going through and see, we're looking at it saying, actually, I should be further along, but not actually doing anything about it. Not actually seeking to bring about any change. They didn't seem to feel a need to do anything about it. Now, that was never the plan. I don't believe they ever arrived in that place and thought, you know, I'm going to leave the temple for 14 years. I don't believe that they actually even meant to leave it for that long, yet somehow it seems to have lost its this sense that it's bothering them. And it's almost like they've accepted it as if, well, this is okay. This is the level that we'll kind of settle at. One of the definitions of apathy that I read was a numbness that creeps in. You know, so we're in this place and we're just, well, I'm accepting this. I'm kind of a bit numb. And you know, it's easy to throw stones, isn't it? It's easy to stand here and go, oh, that's shocking. You shouldn't feel like that and you shouldn't be like that. But yeah, it's really easy to drift into that in our own spiritual lives. As I said, with our prayer, worship, Bible, fasting, coming to church, family, marriage, that should be something more, but it's not yet. I kind of feel numb. I don't feel as concerned as I know that I should do. And I wouldn't say, oh, I intended to not be praying and spending time with God, or I intended to not be opening my Bible, and I intended, you know, to let my marriage get into this condition. We wouldn't say, I intended that to happen, but it's like apathy causes us just to settle and say, well, this is the way it is, and I accept it. And that's kind of what had happened. And Haggai teaches us years can go by like that. And what happens in them years is like they do. You even start making excuses. Well, it's not the time to build the Lord's house yet. Verse 2, it's kind of like, well, I know I should, but how many people here, like me, are fantastic at making excuses? No, well, I know I should do that, but. Yes, I know I should read more or pray more or come to that or support that or, you know, but, by the way, I don't know why it's gone 1-1-1 up there. It should be 1-2-3, but I'm sure you figured that out. But we're great at making excuses. Yeah, I should witness, but I should tithe, but I should support, but. And yet Haggai draws their attention. He just says, hey guys, come on. I just want you to see something here. When you're passionate and hungry about something, you find time to do it. If it's important to you, and he said, what's happened is, guys, you got so focused on building your houses, you've got time to build that, but not time to build time in to be with God, to build a place for God. It's like you've got no money to give to build in the temple, but you've got enough money to panel your own house. And paneling in them days was a sign of luxury. And it just kind of challenges me that actually, if I look at my life and I just say, well, what am I making time for and what am I not making time for is a kind of a good indicator of where I'm at. Because we always find time for the things, to do the things that matter to us. Number 3, appetites fade and apathy sets in. And this is the last point. Appetites fade and apathy sets in when we stop living beyond ourselves. Verse 9, he says, guys, he says, each of you is busy with your own house. There was a bigger mandate. There was a bigger picture. There was a bigger purpose that they were to be connected with, which was to build something for the glory of God. To build lives, to be a community, to be a people, God speaks about, who honored him. Who built something for his glory, for his honor. And it wasn't that they'd completely abandoned things. This is what I'm saying. It wasn't like they'd completely walked away from God. It was just that other priorities had seemingly begun to take over. Time and energy and resources are being poured in and devoted to other things rather than to God. And as I said earlier, paneling being a sign of luxury. Verse 4, they're building paneling houses. Now is God saying, wait, it's wrong for you to have a nice house to live in. You know, take the paneling down, make it look scuzzy, and that's fine, I'll accept it. No. God wasn't saying it's that. I believe that he just wanted them to see that what had happened was a passion for material things had overtaken a passion for spiritual things. So I'm not standing in the pulpit today saying it's wrong if you've got a nice house, or it's wrong if you've got a nice car, or it's wrong if you sometimes go on nice holidays. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is appetites fade and apathy kicks in when the pursuit of that stuff overtakes the pursuit of God. When spiritual things become second to material things. Where your heart is, there your treasure will be also. You know, the things which we think about, the things which we run after, are good indicators of our hunger levels and our passion levels. And hunger, priorities can affect and influence our levels of hunger. When they were alive and connected to the purpose of we're here for the glory of God, and we're here to build something that glorifies his name, and we're here to honor him, they were alive. Spiritually, they were alive. When life was about me and my house, and I still believe in God, and I still want to be a part of that, but it's down the list compared to this, hunger and passion fade. Do you know your hunger and passion, friends, will never come as alive as when you connect with the bigger mission and the bigger picture and the bigger purpose, that we are here to build something for the glory of God. That we want to build families, homes, marriages, lives, churches, communities that exist for the glory of God. We want to see people saved and added. We want to see this family grow. We want to see people healed and set free and their life changed and transformed. When you connect with that, you'll never feel so alive. So we want to be alive, then we need to live beyond ourselves. And yet they find themselves, it's really interesting, I'm nearly done, I promise. Verse 6 tells us this apathy, this living for themselves, left them in this place of dissatisfaction and frustration. He's talking about, like, you've planted much, but, you know, receive little back. You know, you've got money that you put in purses, but it's like it's got holes in it. You know, it's like this sense of like dissatisfaction and just this sense of, it paints a picture of this sense of like you feel like there's this constant lack. There will always feel a constant lack until we connect with the bigger purpose. Life, it will always feel like it's missing something until we connect with the bigger purpose, that we're here to build something for the glory of God. They'd sown plenty of seed, but harvests were bad. Savings were gone, barns were empty, fields were bare, and wells were dry. Verse 9, I just want to reread it to you. Verse 9 through to 11. Where do we go? You accepted much, but see it turned out to be little. What you brought home I blew away. Why, declares the Lord Almighty, because of my house which remains a ruin, or each of you is busy with your own house. Therefore, because of you, the heavens have withheld their dew and the earth its crops. It's been withheld. I called for a drought on the fields and the mountains, on the grain, the new wine, the olive oil, and everything else on the ground produces, on people and livestock, and all your labor of your hands. Okay. Do you know that hunger is a key to releasing God's blessing and favor over your life? And what happens is that hunger and passion releases God's blessing and favor over us, whereas apathy seems to withhold it. And sometimes, because he loves us, God lets us go through seasons in our life that, for want of a better expression, are jolly hard, in order that it might wake us up to show us that we serve a God who loves us and wants to pour out his favor and blessing over our lives. But that our lives have reached a place where that favor and blessing is being withheld. But because he's a good God who loves us, he wants to ignite and awaken us up so that in order that he can release his blessing and favor over us again. What the whole purpose was here was to reignite this passion and hunger, because God was saying, I want to release my favor and blessing upon you. And he just says to them, see what life is like now with a lack of appetite and apathy, but what life was like before with hunger. And then he says this, he says, you know, if they'll, you'll respond. And there's a challenge in there for them to respond. And if they'll respond, that it would release God's hunger. It would release God's blessing and God's favor over them. Em, I just wonder if you and the band can come back, because I'm near enough done. So hunger releases God's favor and blessing, and yet apathy can seem to cost us. And God appeals to them through Haggai because he loves them. And he says in verse 5, he just says this, he says it again, I think is it verse 7 off the top of my head? He says, give careful thought to your ways. And perhaps you can just play for us. Give careful thought to your ways. He's just saying, hey guys, just look, just take a look at life right now and where is that? And just give careful thought to this because I intend so much more for you than this. You see, and as God challenges us this morning and comes in, and really I think this is what I feel in my heart. It's like God's just coming saying, hey, just give careful thought to the way things are right now in your spiritual life because I intend much more for you. I love you, and so I'm knocking on your heart's door because I don't want to withhold blessing and favor. I want to release blessing and favor. So he says, give careful thought. He says, change some stuff. Make some decisions so that your apathy goes and your appetite returns. And what did he want them to do? He wanted them to reestablish a place and time to meet with God. Pick up the project again. Go back and reestablish that in your life, a time and a place to meet with God. Prayer and worship and sacrifice and offering yourself to me. And he says, I want you to face this feeling of contentment. I'm not criticizing you for it, but I want you just to realize you've settled in. You just kind of accepted this, and maybe it's been like that for years. And I want you to lay aside any excuses, and I want you to make some changes. And he says, guys, I want you to connect again with the biggest purpose, the bigger purpose of living beyond yourself and building for the glory of God. And do you know, when they hear that, three things happen. In verse 12, they respond. They obey. And as a result of responding, in verse 13, there's a release because God says, I am with you. There's a release again of God's favor and blessing because they've responded to the challenge that God has brought to them. And in verse 13, there's a revival. The Spirit of the Lord is stirred up on the inside of them. They're stirred and inspired, and hunger and passion are reawakened, and an appetite has returned, and they get back to what it's really all about. And why did God put his finger on all of that? Why did God come and put his finger on that apathy, on that lack of appetite? Because he loved them. And because he wanted to pour his blessing and his favor over his children. And he wanted to use them for his glory. And you know, maybe you're sitting here this morning and God's just put his finger on something. I'll tell you why he's done it. Because he loves you. And because he wants to release his blessing and favor over your life. And because he wants to use you for his glory.